This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Just Tom and Stacy today. The show is just flying by. By the way, if you want to text into the show,
Tom and Stacy.
Well, I mean, you know, usually we have three, and today there are two.
Starring Tom and Stacy today, or Stacy for short.
Featuring the services of Curtis Rogers. By the way, if you want to text in, 710-710 is the number, powered by Vizzy Hard Seltzer. Right now, we bring in the Professor John Clayton. Professor, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you two doing?
Well, we're doing just fine, as I was just remarking there. You know, one thing we've been talking about all day, John, is, you know, this saga of Jadeveon Clowney goes on and on and on. But if Everson Griffin were to disappear off the board suddenly, I could see the Seahawks getting in a bidding war with somebody else, probably Tennessee, for Clowney. What's the market right now for Griffin, do you think?
I think it's gone from about $8 to $3 million on a one-year deal. Because if you notice, just about every signing now is minimum salary, and obviously Griffin's going to have a little bit more clout than that, but I don't think he has the clout to be able to get the $8 million or so. And so, and clearly there's not been a bidding war whatsoever, because you haven't heard of any offers that have gone to him, so he's still out there. And of course, in the Clowney case, I mean, it looks like it's just between two teams, you know, Tennessee and Seattle. I don't think Cleveland's involved now. They might have been back about a month ago, but not now. And so at this stage, even with Tennessee being something that he would consider, my understanding is the offer by Seattle is now probably more. I mean, they've now gone up, I think, to a point where, you know, it was probably in that $13 to $15 million range. And obviously anything we're talking about, it's going to be a one-year deal. I think they've gone as high as $16 million. My read on Tennessee is that if they do anything, this is going to be maybe a one-year $10 million deal. And so, but, you know, knowing that he can't get a physical, Tennessee can't do anything now. Nobody else can do anything other than Seattle. And right now he's not ready to do anything.
So do you think the Seahawks then are relatively safe in waiting as long as they want to, maybe right up to the start of the season, to come back at Clowney with maybe a better offer than the one that he didn't like at $13 million?
At some point, you just got to cut it off, and that's, you know, when he decides to do it. But again, you know, you can see that they don't have to have the urgency to rush into anything now. And the reason they don't have to do that is that they've got four options at the Leo, two with experience who've been in the system, Vince Amaoa and Bruce Irvin. And of course, two rookies that they drafted. And they have the two at the five technique, LJ Collier and Rasheem Green. And so, you know, very much like last year, you just now wait for an opportunity. Maybe somebody pops free. Because remember last year, right in May, they were able to get Ziggy Ansah. Unfortunately, that didn't work out as well. And then you got Clowney, who came to him right before the start of the regular season in the trade. So you might as well wait, because say what you want about what looks to be a big cap number right now after they saved $12.2 million when they made the two cuts on the offensive line. That money goes fast, because you got $7 million that's tied up in the rookie pool, $7+ million. Then you've got, I still think it's around $4 million on Bruce Irvin. I still haven't seen the contract yet. And so literally that takes you down, you know, to 16 and 9 if you look at the remaining stuff after the rookie pool. That's not a lot of money if you want to re-sign some people or do a lot of other business.
Is it fair for Clowney to just keep waiting then, if the assumption is that COVID and the quarantine is what's impacting this? Because I remember looking at projections for what a yearly salary for him would be, and on sites like Over the Cap or Spot Track, they had him still around $20 million. So if that was kind of a consensus, then why would he not assume that quarantine is the reason it's so low?
What he's got to, let's put it this way, I don't know how much he's thinking on this, because he's not thinking too well. No, the numbers can only go down. It's not going to go up. And, you know, like, for example, I know that, you know, Ziggy Ansah was coming off the shoulder injury last year, and so shoulder surgery. And, you know, he was hoping to get, you know, $14 to $15 million, and he ended up getting $9 million from Seattle. And I think it's going to be a similar thing for Clowney, where, you know, it's going to be, if he, I mean, the Seattle offers right now going to be better than anything that he's going to get with another team. Simple as that. And the longer you wait, the less it becomes. And, you know, at some point, you know, if because, again, the Tennessee Titans don't necessarily need a linebacker. You know, they paid $9.5 million for Vic Beasley. They had $2.25 million for Camille Correa. And, you know, they had Harold Landry that they drafted a couple years ago. And so they've got that. This is a bonus if they can get it, but it's a bonus that's going to be at the expense of Clowney if he ends up taking it.
So our understanding then is it's really just between Tennessee and Seattle. I saw Jim Moore tweet that it didn't look like Cleveland took anyone to fill that spot that Clowney would take, so he thought maybe they'd still be in there. But our understanding and your understanding is it's just Tennessee and Seattle, right?
Right now, yeah. And I know Diana Rossini from ESPN checked in on it too and is pretty much hearing the same thing. And technically, you know, Cleveland did sign a defensive end, even though it wasn't very expensive, Adrian Claiborne, who, you know, is more of a five technique type, but they've actually signed one and they got Miles Garrett on the other side, and they've tried not to go too crazy in free agency. And so, you know, it'd be a nice bonus for them to be able to get him because Miles Garrett agent is Jadeveon Clowney's agent, but I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, you mentioned Benson Mayo and Bruce Irvin, two guys who have been here before. They know the system a little bit. How likely do you think it is that Benson Mayo is a major contributor in 2020?
Well, I think he's going to be. I think he's going to be a contributor, and there's no question. And how do you want to define major? The major contributor is going to be the guy that lines up on first down as the defensive end. And I think right now the edge probably goes under these current circumstances to, you know, having Bruce Irvin do it. And then on the other side, probably L.J. Collier. And so that means two new starters at defensive end. But still, the luxury of having somebody like a Clowney gets you that much better. Because, again, I think that Mayola fits in the rotation. And what they did do with Mayola and Irvin is get 15.5 sacks. They both combined for that last year in the roles that they had with their team. So I think ultimately, you know, you want to try to get something done with the defensive end. But, hey, if you have to go in like that or just wait for something else to happen, you just wait.
John, we haven't talked to you since the draft happened or since it was completed.
I know.
What did you think overall?
I thought it was a solid. I thought it was a good draft. I mean, they, you know, and of course, I love the comments that everybody said, not knowing what was going on. It says, well, yeah, they took you know, Jordan Brooks a little high. Well, yeah, because they were planning to take him right where the Green Bay Packers were drafting in the second round, and that fell apart when the Packers backed out of a deal and took the deal with the Miami Dolphins, and so that gets it at the 26th pick. And so with nobody else trying to trade up, then it's like, okay, then you have to make the pick. And obviously, as John Snyder said, the highest player on the board was Jordan Brooks. And now the more that you think about it, it turns out to be a very good move because they were able to trade up and get Daryl Taylor at the defensive end position and Alton Robinson, you know, down the line in the fifth round. That worked out well. And then also they were able to come back and, you know, they got, you know, a linebacker, particularly knowing now that KJ Wright's coming off minor shoulder surgery or shoulder surgery, that now you can have, you know, Brooks compete against Cody Barton and ultimately have the long-term replacement for KJ Wright.
What's your understanding about what the team's situation with Michael Kendricks is right now? I know he's an unrestricted free agent, but do you sense there's any movement with him at all?
No, I don't think. I think that that ship has passed. You know, as much as they like him, as much as they want, because first off, he's coming after a late season ACL injury, so he's probably. I mean, you can say almost in the same boat as Rashad Penny, that they would start the season on PUP if you sign him. And then they're stacked up right now at the strong side linebacker position, because I think what's going to happen, they'll take KJ Wright, move him to the strong side, have Barton compete against Brooks at the weak side. You have Bobby Wagner in the middle. But think about this. Talking the other day to Benson Mayoa, his understanding is that you know, Bruce Irvin, if he doesn't start at defensive end, is going to compete a little bit at the strong side. And then you have Shaquem Griffin. So there's enough players to play on the strong side that it's going to wipe out any chance of Kendricks coming back. And then Kendricks, unfortunately, you know, wouldn't probably be there for the start of the regular season.
Hey, John, you had a chance to chat with new rookie running back DJ Dallas on your show a couple days ago. How was your conversation like with him?
It was good. I mean, you can see that he's sharp. I mean, he's going to fit in well. What you like about him, there's several different things. First off, you know, he studies hard, and, you know, he comes out here, you know, knowing that his former teammate at the University of Miami, Travis Homer, is here, and they both They may have different styles, but they're both kind of the same type of guys as far as what they do. Both are good on special teams. You got return ability right now with DJ. He can help you out there. I think most people think that he's considered to be the best blocking back on pass plays coming out of college football this past year. So that puts him in a position to be a third down back if necessary. So I think that's a good fit. I think he's going to fit in here well. And again, he's the type of type of player that I think John Snyder and Pete Carroll really like.
What do you think is going to happen with KJ Wright? You mentioned the Jordan Brooks pick being a good one. I agree. But asking a rookie to come in here and just immediately supplant KJ Wright might be a lot to ask. What do you think is going to happen with KJ here?
I don't think he's going to supplant KJ, because I still think KJ is going to start, because you still want your most experienced guys, particularly when you know there's no offseason program, maybe no preseason games. And so you want to keep as much of the guys that have been here. And you can see that's been the effort that John Snyder's done. Now, I don't think it's any accident, knowing that this virus is going to wipe out so much of the preparation, that they went back and brought back two players who have been in the system. And KJ Wright obviously is a big part of the system. And so, what's going to, I think, happen is that you'll have, the weak side competition between Barton and Brooks, and then KJ starting. Because, again, I mean, everybody wants to cut him and have a pay cut and stuff like that. Well, no, I don't. At this stage, no. You don't need to do that. I mean, he's too valuable. And when you have young linebackers, because when you think about all the guys that are behind these two, they're all, second year, maybe second year or younger. So you want them to help teach, and they're very good at doing that.
Do you think that, John, as we sit here today, John?
What's that again?
Do you think as we sit here today, John, that the defense, even just looking at potential with some of the draft picks, that their defense is better today than it was in 2019?
Yes, I do. Yeah, because, look at the, first off, the secondary, getting Quentin Dunbar was sensational. I mean, 4-4, 4-40 guy that can come in. Maybe Pro Football Focus was a little ambitious in saying that he was the second best cornerback in the league, because he didn't get voted to the Pro Bowl, but it was a bad Redskin team. But I mean, that's an upgrade, and we'll see how he competes against Trey Flowers. Then you can look at one of the most interesting things I heard this week, which I don't know is going to happen, but somebody was thinking that maybe Marquise Blair, they might try to teach him how to be the slot guy. And so then you have a 4-4-8 guy who's big and hard hitting. And one of the big efforts this team is now trying to do, they want to be faster and they want to be more physical. It is a lot to ask for Brooks to be able to start, but he's a 4-5-6 guy. So look at that speed. And that's right now very important. And you can see that a lot of teams are trying to get that speed. And so defensively, now they have, six guys that are the defensive ends. Still have to get a run-stopping defensive tackle. Obviously on offense, they have to get a backup quarterback who's a veteran. But I think this defense is better. But the question is, how good is it as far as sacking the quarterback? I mean, last year they were tied for 29th with 28 sacks. They've got to get the 40 somehow.
John, it's funny you mentioned that. I was just going to ask you about what they do on the interior of that defensive line. I think we thought they might get a defensive tackle in the draft. They didn't end up going that way. It doesn't have to be a particular name, although I know that you track all of these guys, so you know. But what kind of move could they make, and when could that happen? I mean, if it is bringing in a veteran free agent, is that something you see happening in the late summer, more of a training camp acquisition?
No, it'll happen as soon as they can get a deal done and/or the price comes down enough. Because again, for example, if they want to bring in a running back, it's going to be minimum salary. If they want to bring in a quarterback, it's going to be minimum salary. But for a defensive tackle, what did they pay? Like about $2.5 million for Al Woods last year, and he was a very good run stopper. The guy that I know that the Taco Charlton thing was brought up, and it's not a bad idea because he's a former first-round pick. He'd be part of the rotation, but in a lot of ways, he would more be the pass rush defensive tackle, and that's maybe what you have with Brandon Jackson. And so I don't know if it's a fit, because one thing that why Taco is kind of struck out is that he's zero as far as blocking on against the run. He's not very good stopping the run, and so that's knocked him out of Miami and Dallas. The guy that I like would be Marcell Dareus. Marcell Dareus is a former Pro Bowler. He's a big, powerful defensive tackle. I don't know if you can get him for 2.5, but he doesn't have a job right now. That's the type of guy. And one thing that we saw last year with New England, we saw it with Seattle. I mean, a lot of the bargains come up right now. I mean, that you can get. You know, that's why, I mean, they got Nick Velour last year, even though it didn't work out. They got Ziggy Ansah. They got Al Woods. And so they're always going to be looking, particularly now that unrestricted free agency is over and you got street free agents. And right now, most of the street free agents are coming in for bargains.
John, this is a question I kept seeing on our text line. Me and Tom opened the show by talking about kind of the gamble for Clowney. Do you miss out on Everson Griffen? And it felt like the question I keep seeing is, can the Seahawks get both? Why not both guys? Do they have the cap flexibility to do that at all? Is
absolutely
it out of the question?
Not. Nope, they cannot do it. That's impossible. Yeah, because you know what you're having right now for wiggle room is, you know, at least, I mean, maybe $9 million, but you also have to allot for injuries, because again, you know, even though you're not going to get the mini camp and OTA injuries, but you know, guys are going to eventually go on the injured reserve list, and it's probably going to be even bigger in training camp. I know it won't happen because of probably no preseason games, but you have to allot, you know, $4 or $5 million for your injured list, and so there's less money than people think. And remember, the other part about it, too, is that, you know, we're talking, you know, they have $20 million now, not counting the Irvin contract, but that's on the top 51. And one thing this year, you're going to have to add, you know, two more players that are going to count because of the 55-man roster that's going to be there. You're going to have, you know, more money in the practice squad. So it shrinks faster than anybody thinks. So it's like it may look big right now, but they're under no circumstance can they, you know, go ahead and bring in both guys.
I want to ask you just one or two questions just outside of the Seahawks before we let you go, John. Who do you think would be a better fit for the Patriots, Andy Dalton or Cam Newton?
It would be Cam Newton because he's the better quarterback. I mean, that would be the better fit. Now, the question is it going to fit into Bill Belichick's mind or the mind of his dog, who did a good job of trying to draft this year when you saw him at the Bill Belichick house? But everything I'm hearing out of there, and this is going to be the defining thing, because if they don't sign Andy Dalton, then they're definitely going with Jarrett Stidham, and that's been the thought all along. I thought they would draft a quarterback in the first three rounds. They didn't. And so I think right now, you know, and the reason I bring up Cam Newton, one, he's the better quarterback of the two. I mean, he's been an MVP once. And then two, Bill Belichick has always said good things about Cam Newton. And when he does something like that to somebody that's beaten him a few times, he's always going to be in the thought process.
Who do you think winning is more important to this year, Brady or Belichick?
I'd say Belichick, because he's going to take the heat for not bringing back Brady, or at least ruining the relationship with Brady. And at this moment, I mean, you look at that roster, and remember, they're still right up against the cap. I mean, they have $1 million of cap room right now, and they haven't brought in anybody. I mean, unless you think Marquise Lee can turn everything around, that's really the only legitimate starter that he's brought in on offense, and he really hasn't brought any starters in on defense.
Professor, we appreciate you jumping on here on a Friday. Take care, sir.
Okay, thank you.
John Clayton on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is the professor. You know, just in thinking about that last question I asked him there, who is winning more important to, Brady or Belichick? I mean, when you think about that, you have to take into consideration the amount, the length of time that each of their careers are going to continue. If Belichick wanted to keep on coaching for like another 5 years, he could probably do it. Brady can't. So the urgency for him, I think, is greater right now. But just as far as the battle of egos, like who wants to show that they can win without the other? God, it's a tough question.
I think
like,
it's going to be Brady.
Okay, I think so too, but why? I can't really explain why.
Okay, I know. I think it's going to be Brady because Belichick is obviously universally regarded as one of the best coaches ever. And I don't know that, I think he could go 500 and people would still have a hard time saying that was just his fault, because they'd look and they'd say, well, you didn't have much at quarterback and whatever. You know,
you can almost use that as an excuse.
Exactly. Yeah. It kind of, the opposite of that kind of works too. I hadn't thought before of the idea of it was part of Belichick's decision to let him go, which obviously, but John pointing that out, it is a good point. But I don't know. I think that there's more pressure on Brady also because he's always gotten the credit, and one of the critiques about him and the Patriots in general from people that aren't Patriots fans has always been that they play in a soft division. So going to the NFC, going to, you know what I mean, being in a different atmosphere, yeah. I wonder if people will say, well, now that you're not playing, you know, these guys six times a year, it's a different story, isn't it? I don't think that was the case, but I don't know. It feels like there's still more pressure on Brady. I'm sitting here trying to justify it in real time, and I don't know why I feel this way, but it's how I feel.
If right? Belichick, here's the thing. Like, neither one of them can bomb. Like, if Belichick ends up going 9-7 making the playoffs, but Brady goes 5-11, then it'll be pretty clear what the criticism will be. Everybody will say, oh, look, Tom Brady can't win without Bill Belichick. Bruce Arians is an idiot, and Brady, look, in the wrong system, he can't win. If the opposite of that is true, Belichick goes 5-11 and Brady makes the playoffs, I still think, kind of like you're saying, I still think that Belichick gets off lightly because of all the champions. I mean,
who does he have?
Brady is only responsible for himself at the end of the day, whereas Belichick is responsible for the 52 other guys in the organization, et cetera, et cetera. So for him to hold together that Patriot culture for 20 straight years, mm-hmm. I think is a bit bigger deal. But, I mean, there's no way to argue this. You can't really quantify it. Because there's too many different ways that you can interpret it. If you have an opinion on it, by the way, text us 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Coming up next, we're going to get to some NFL headlines, including a couple of the things we just asked Clayton there. Will Andy Dalton really get a job before Cam Newton? That seems weird. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
Stacey, the Mariners have finally stumped me. They've gotten me. Because
how so?
The game that we're going to air tonight at 7 o'clock, now this is one that comes from the recent past, like we were all here for it. This is July 31st, 2015.
That's Phenom. Harry Potter's birthday.
What, July 31st?
Uh-huh.
They specify that? Okay, I'm not interested, sorry. July 31st, 2015. Taiwan Walker goes up into Minnesota and throws a one-hitter. I have no recollection of this game whatsoever. Now, for the most part, we've been playing you like playoff games, all-star games, things that are obviously more memorable. Even if the Mariners come out on the wrong side of something, we remember it. I was doing pre and post at this point. There's a good possibility, like, this was a long day for me. No recollection of it. Whatsoever.
It'll be like Taiwan watching it Walker, for the first time.
I guess. Maybe that's the good news. So Taiwan Walker goes the distance with a one-hitter. The only hit he allows is to... Oh, you know what? I won't say it because people will get mad at me. You can guess
spoiler.
Which Minnesota Twin comes up with the big hit to break that up. But tonight at 7 o'clock on 710 ESPN Seattle, it'll be the Mariners and the Twins facing off. Taiwan Walker going up there and dominating. All right, let's get to some NFL headlines. Andy Dalton, Cam Newton, we know where Jameis Winston is. He's going to be backing up. Now, he's in kind of a crowded quarterback room in New Orleans because they have Drew Brees, they have Taysom Hill for their gadget plays, and Jameis Winston doing God knows what, just sitting there learning how not to throw interceptions. Because if his judgment had been even a little bit better, he might even still be Tampa Bay's starter, and Brady could have ended up somewhere else. Who knows how that could have worked out. But we've got Andy Dalton and Cam Newton. Who gets a job first, Stacey?
Oh, man. It might be Andy Dalton, which is so weird to think about. During the break, we were, full disclosure, we were all kind of chatting about this, and... Curtis, you mentioned it, how weird it was to think that Cam Newton might be the last of these guys to land somewhere. And it was like, absolutely. Imagine if in 2014 or 15, someone told you, yeah, so anyways, Cam Newton gonna be struggling to find a landing spot in 2020. You'd be like, no way, absolutely not. This guy is a monster on the field. This makes no sense. And I still kind of feel that way. I don't know why he hasn't found a landing spot. I don't buy people that say, oh, he's a diva. I don't want him here. It, like, a team that wants to win doesn't really care about that. Not all the time. I mean, there are teams that are very particular about the personalities they bring in, but I don't know. Cam Newton has never struck me as, like, a locker room cancer. I think that he's really talented.
Yeah,
and I
agree.
Maybe his health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think his teammate, look, it's not that he didn't get into it with teammates from time to time. I know Steve Smith kind of went after him, but Steve Smith was a veteran player. Cam Newton was young. He kind of needed that. The rest of his teammates, they liked him as a leader. The weird part about it is I feel like the teams that might be left that need a quarterback or ones that are looking for a backup, they don't want to have a potential stud quarterback waiting in the wings as a backup, because then that creates a situation where it's like, well, should Cam be our starter, right? Like, say the Jets were to take Cam,
yeah,
and you're starting Sam Darnold. It's only going to take a half of a football game before Jet fans start itching for Cam Newton, right? So I feel like the more comfortable, the more malleable guy between those two is Andy Dalton if you're looking for a backup. But for a team that's looking for a starter right now, I mean, God, this is a golden opportunity. Cam did pass the physical.
I know. I don't know that Cam would agree to be a backup anywhere. I think he's a starting caliber quarterback. But wouldn't you want to have the best quarterback situation? I mean, that's what got the Eagles to a Super Bowl win, was having the best quarterback situation in the league. I think that Newton is better than Foles. But so rarely do you have a guy that's as good as your starter. That drop-off for every team is normally pretty big. There are some teams, though, that I think like to bring in a guy that maybe for 1 or 2 years. The tough thing with a team like the Jets is Darnold has been your starter. It's not like you just drafted him. And now you're bringing in someone to, you know, like a Mahomes, you're bringing in Alex Smith, or you already had Alex Smith, and you let your rookie sit for a year, maybe even a little bit more than that. This is, yeah, he would be taking a job away from Darnold. But I don't know, that's a good situation to have still.
Well, the Eagles situation is unique because Wentz was a potential MVP the year they won the Super Bowl, and nobody thought that Nick Foles at the time was better than him or should have been playing over Wentz. If you've got Cam as your backup and, say, a Darnold as your starter, that's different, because I think that athletically and overall, in terms of overall ability, I mean, Cam's already been an MVP. He's led a team to a Super Bowl, 50-1, and won the whole thing. Sam Darnold hasn't done any of that. Sam Darnold, whatever his peak is going to be, he isn't even anywhere close to that. So bringing in Cam could be a dangerous idea. I could see that, but look, he's just still the better player. It's weird.
Yeah.
Rookie wide receiver in Dallas, CeeDee Lamb, was given jersey number 88 in Dallas. Now, jersey number 88 in Dallas means something. That's Dez Bryant, that's Michael Irvin, that's Drew Pearson. Here's the thing about retiring numbers, or on retiring numbers in football. When you're a wide receiver, for example, there's only 20 different numbers you can pick from. You can pick from any of the numbers in the teens or any of the numbers in the 80s. And over the amount of time that your franchise has existed, how many wide receivers have you had? Right, there's only so many numbers you can choose from. In baseball, it's easy. Like, you retire 42 for Jackie Robinson, simple. Nobody ever wears 42 again. But in baseball, you can pick any number you want at any position. In football, it's different. Like, what choice does he have? It's one thing to unretire Steve Largent to give it to Jerry Rice. I didn't think that was quite necessary. But, you know, for all these other guys, if your number isn't retired, so be it. Just pass it on.
Well, and I don't want the big shoes to fill, too, right? I almost want my own number just so I don't constantly having people say, you don't deserve to wear that. You know? I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
Well, yeah,
there's already enough pressure.
One.
Yeah, I don't want it. I don't want it. Keep it away from me.
Yeah, what you got to do is you got to pick that. Like, if you're a wide receiver, you got to pick that one number. I think it's like 86. The only all-time great 86 that I can think of, and Curtis, you can help me out here if you can think of another one, is Hines Ward. Like, he's got to be the best 86 there ever was. So if you're a wide receiver coming into the league, you pick the number that hasn't really been stamped yet and branded by. Like, 32 is like O.J. Simpson, and 22, Emmitt Smith, guys like that, Barry Sanders. What was he, 20? I think he was 20. Like, you don't want to take one of those. But, yeah, take the one that hasn't been used up yet. Brandon Cook says being traded three times, quote, shows that I'm wanted. This is an interesting thing because we talked about this a few weeks ago. Do you look at the guy who keeps getting traded around the league with disdain, like, man, this guy can't stay anywhere? Or do you look at it like, man, everybody wants this guy? Like, because Brandon Cooks is still a heck of a player. I mean, I know he had a bit of a down year last year, but in that offense that can happen. They're throwing to like 8 different guys. But he's still, I mean, I feel like he's still a gift and a good pickup to whoever has him.
He is still a good pickup. I don't know, though, that I would look at it that way. Like, look, just because Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson haven't been traded doesn't mean that there aren't 31 other teams that would want them. They're so wanted that they never hit free agency. That's the point, right?
Right.
You never hit free agency and you never...
Right.
Yeah, and you're never really on the trade block unless it's some insane... I don't think they trade them, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they are also very wanted. It's just... I mean, it's a really positive way to look at it. You know what? I'm going to be positive. Good for him. He is a good player.
Well, could it also be that he's the places he's played, New England, New Orleans, L.A., those are all places that throw to a lot of different guys. So statistically, none of those teams were ever going to rely on just him, even if at times he was the most skilled receiver that each of those teams had. They run systems where they don't need any one guy. I mean, look, New Orleans, maybe you want to try to get the ball to Michael Thomas as often as you can. But if Brandon Cooks were somewhere else, like if he were in, I don't know, San Diego or wherever, maybe they would have paid him. Maybe it would have been different for him. But the teams that he happens to end up on look at him as a piece, and they look at any wide receiver as a piece. So who knows? Maybe that could be the reason. All right, we're going to sum it up next. The week is almost over. 710 ESPN
Yay!
Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Ah! All right, we have some breaking news, some unfortunate breaking news, but I think something that most of us expected. Governor Inslee is going to extend the stay-at-home order through May 31st. I don't understand this other part.
Okay.
But it's going to... It's the part about reopening the economy in some
What's
sense.
It say?
I'm not really sure what that means. Do you know what that means?
Reopening the economy? I mean, well, what does it say?
It says... I'll just read it. It says, but also
okay, yes.
Turning the dial with four-phase reopen of economy.
Oh, that presumably then during this time they would start to – I forget the exact phases. I think they're on the – maybe his website or like a link on his Twitter page or something. But it would be something like, okay, first we're going to allow for non-essential surgeries or something, like if you need a hip replacement, now you can get that done.
Okay.
I don't know if that's in the first phase, but so over phases. So like phase, like sporting events would be not anywhere in the early phases, like things where there's lots of fans or parties or concerts or bars are not in those early phases. It's the starting with the most essential going to least essential. I just don't know exactly what's in them, but that's the general thing. Also, I don't know if you guys are like this, but you know when there's something really awful, but it's your birthday, so you say, that's my birthday? Like, for instance, someone will be like, oh, yeah, no, I know. There was this awful, awful, I don't know, like, this celebrity died on June 9th. Or, like, there was this, like, oh, the war of whatever started on June 10th. And you'll just go, that's my birthday. That's like without thinking. That's what I thought with this, because my birthday's May 31st, and it I just immediately thought, that's my birthday.
Well, anyway, but that's a good thing though. Like that
selfish.
Could be, if it's through May 31st, that could mean that, like, you know, the next day we're back out there.
I have a rager. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's all, you know, it's an honor of Stacy is the whole thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
You know, you asked me before, Stacy, whether or not I would watch golf if that were the only sport on, or NASCAR, which soon is going to be
NASCAR.
The only sport on. Now, we watched the NFL draft like hawks, right? Every last
yes.
minute of it. Now, I'm reading this tweet here. It says the New York Islanders, who are a hockey team, for those of you who don't know, Lou Lamoriello paid attention to the NFL draft and believes the NHL will be well prepared for similar virtual draft if necessary. Would you be so desperate to watch another draft that you would watch a hockey draft?
Yes. Yeah. Is that a question?
Really?
I would watch a draft of literally anything. I would watch a peewee baseball draft. They don't have such a thing. They should, though. That would be fun. You know what I mean?
You would not watch that.
All these kids from the,
I would.
Oh, yeah, I would watch it. All these kids from the prairies of
Canada.
Curtis
would absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. Get clawed from Nova Scotia out there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would watch it.
Of course, you got someone from Labrador and, I don't know,
Newfoundland.
Retriever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Labrador, I think, is in Newfoundland, but that's awesome. Oh, congrats to you guys. You found something to watch. I'll probably just be staring at the wall. All right, I gave the Seahawks an A- for their draft. I talked all about it this week. Have you changed your mind from a C grade earlier this week at all with some time to think about what they've done? You've heard other people talk about it, et cetera?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, not just from talking with other people, but from their subsequent moves. So, like, obviously, Damian Lewis makes a lot more sense with the release of DJ Fluker. You know what I mean? So as things have started to fall into place, it makes more sense. Also, I think speaking with he was a former SEC scout for the Seahawks, longtime NFL scout. He's now with oversees the Senior Bowl, but Jim Nagy. We had him on Tuesday. Yeah. Tom, you were out sick. I'm not sure if you heard the interview, but I think he swayed my mind on especially Jordan Brooks. And I think that he added context to the Daryl Taylor selection by saying, like, look, whether or not you think there is a better edge rusher available, this guy is a Seahawk and fits with the Seahawks. And I think thinking about that, obviously, he has plenty of potential. He was an early second round pick. But thinking about that and then listening to John Schneider on with Danny and Gallant and Pete Carroll's separate podcast that he did, I feel like I understand why the Seahawks made some of those picks. And I think that if you are an organization that has conviction and sticks with that, there is something pretty admirable about that. And I think that they still have holes on their roster that they haven't filled. And for instance, we talked with John Clayton, defensive tackle. What are you going to do there? How's your depth there? Puna Ford has been good. Jaron Reed's coming back on an extension, but you don't have a ton of depth behind those two. So there's a lot of questions still. And I don't know that they have the strongest roster in the division, and that's going to be tough. You're in the strongest division in football. So there's a lot there still. It's not like a knock it out of the park A+, but I think some context has made me understand that these are Seahawks picks and they fit the team and it makes sense.
So next year when the draft rolls around, because I mean, what you just said there, I think we always know it, but when the draft, by the time the draft comes around, we kind of forget it. Either that or we want them to just make the type of picks that we would make. By the time next year rolls around.
And we become draft experts.
Right.
I put on my
Seat
glasses.
Are you going to say, I want these guys to make Seahawk picks next year? Or are you going to say, I want them to make the picks that I would make?
I want, not that I would make. I don't know anything. I want a happy medium. I would want.
Well, filling needs, that type of thing.
Yeah, filling needs. I wouldn't want to see blind faith picks. I don't want just like we have so much confidence in our program that we ignore red flags. Like I would hate to see that for any organization. I don't think that these guys had red flags to them. And I think that they were very careful to find guys that they thought would adjust quickly given this offseason, which means that they skipped out on guys. This is how I interpret it, that they skipped out on guys who had really high ceilings but might need some help, more help than normal getting there. But no, I still want a happy medium. Yeah, like you said, still find ways to fill needs, but I think I'm under the, I understand that no matter what, it doesn't matter. I was listening to another Ringer podcast, and they were previewing all of the, they have the Pete Carroll one, so I listened to this one after, and they were previewing all the shows, and they got to Seattle, and they were like, it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No matter what you think, it doesn't matter. They end up getting 11 wins. And you're scratching your head like, what? I don't understand. But
well, you know what? Pete Carroll is he does happen to be a good coach, and they do have the quarterback, and they've got guys. Look, they drafted good players starting in 2012, some of which are still here, some of which came after that, that have helped to sustain them. I mean, it is a team game. I get that. And you can't have, you know, kickers missing, you know, or losing games for you like you did in 2017.
Yeah.
But if you got that nucleus of players at the right spots, and I believe that they still do, you're probably still going to win a bunch of games. You just will.
I agree.
We're out of here, Stacey.
I know. We're extra out of here. Like, it's Friday.
Yeah. Audi 5000. Hey, be honest, by the way. Did you enjoy your day with Jake or your day with me better?
I don't want to answer this question. You guys are both special and unique in your own way, like snowflakes. I love both of you.
Well, I enjoyed my Friday with Stacey and Curtis.
Me too.
Thanks for helping out, Curtis. We're back on Monday, 710 ESPN Seattle.